Good morning. We're on the subject of taking care of one's house, cleaning, various other things that need to be taken care of in the house, out of the house, around the house. So, if you have a gutter or a drain pipe that is blocked, and as a result, there's a flood of water, rainwater is overflowing, disturbing one's Shabbos, there's got to be a good reason for what one's doing. So then the Shas said, sorry, meaning it's now necessary because you can't live with this water that's overflowing everywhere. You may open up the blockage, but using a utensil that is not mukta, you know, to help the, you can take something that happens by me when there's too many leaves that have blown onto the mepeset, storming and raining, so then the leaves get stuck on the grate of the drain. And then the water backs up. So if that would be a shasa tzarech, depending on how far the water backs up, it's going to threaten to come to the apartment or not. So you can take a sponge stick, although a sponge stick could be is a lishman after the issur, because essentially we said last week that you can't respond on Shabbos except in certain circumstances, so it would be a lishman after the issur. You take something else then, which is not mukta, and you can move the leaves away in order to let the water go down or to push something into the drain that's blocking or something like that. Would be mutter, that's in, but again, it's got to be shasa tzarech if the rainwater is disturbing you. If you have a yard where there's flooding, what one may not do is dig in it. You can't dig a groove, you can't dig out anything that's been filled up. Even if you had a channel where the water usually flows and now it's been filled with dirt, so you cannot clean it on Shabbos, there will be also on Shabbos, even though the flooding. If you have a blocked sink, a blocked toilet, and using a plunger will clear it out. So one may use a plunger, but one should be careful to use a, what they make a difference in halacha between a tool that belongs to a bala bais and a tool that belongs to an uman, meaning the layman's tool or the professional tool. The professional tool one should not use in Shabbos, but to use a layman's tool, one may use in Shabbos. Again, could be that this tool is a because generally one's not going to spend some time cleaning out drains on Shabbos, only when it's Macham HaTzorech and it's covered Abrius involved. So then you can use this tool, but it's Klishim Nachter Issur. But we know that you can move it, Tzorech Makoyim, Tzorech Gufayim, if you need it. So you can take a plunger and clear out something that's blocked and disturbing you on Shabbos. A garbage can, rubbish bin, waste paper basket, whatever you want to call it, Pachashba, is Mukta. And as we've discussed earlier in the sugya of Graf Shorei, that if it is smelly and disturbing, then, or it's full and you don't have a replacement garbage, there's nowhere else to put it. So in such cases, then one would be permitted to empty the garbage, especially nowadays when you have it in a bag. So you're carrying the whole garbage downstairs and bring it back up again. Like they did once upon a time, they took the garbage down, brought it out, and brought it back up again. Here you take the bag out, it'd be easier. But essentially what the bag and everything inside it is mukta, so you have to have a hefet in order to remove it either, because it is, as we said, graf shorei, it's stinking, it's in a place that disturbs you, or covered abrius, you have no place, you have no alternative place to throw out the garbage because this one's full. So then, as covered abrius, you can empty it. To hang a air freshener. If you have an air freshener, as you get these boxes, chemical inside that release good smelling scents, but you need to puncture the box in order for the smell to get out. So puncturing the box on Shabbos is asur, but if it was pre-punctured, you can move it around and you can hang it up in a place where you want it in order to improve the odors of the room that you're hanging it in. And also, you can use air freshener sprays if you spray into the air, because molid reach, which is putting smells into things, is only when you get to items, but not into the air, and also not into food. So you're not going to air freshener the food. Mentioned that molid reach doesn't apply in food. Therefore, taking a spray can, spraying into the air, is not a problem. Placing something which is a scouring or it's cleaning, it's disinfecting. You want to use some sort of disinfecting or extra hard cleaning chemicals to put it into a toilet or something like that. Maybe done on Shabbos, you could put it into the water tank so when the pressure goes down. The problem with it is not to use something to color behind, because coloring is a problem in Shabbos. If you have one of these toilet bowl soaps that do leave color in the water and you forgot to take it out before Shabbos, well, number one is you should first try to remember to take it out before Shabbos. And number two, if you forgot, then you should try to take it out before you use it so you don't end up coloring the water. But remember that it's mukta, and therefore you should take it out kila achayat, non-direct manner or something else, in order to get it out so you don't end up using it for Shabbos. There are those who are machmir on using toilets that have soaps hanging inside them. Other reasons could be they hold that it's memareach, they hold that it's moelid reach. There's different discussions that Aruban has a arichos on it, and he comes out of Maskana that it's mutter. Shmuel Shabbos also holds, Moivit also holds that it's mutter. But don't be surprised if you find someone comes to your house and use the bathroom because you put itself hanging on the inside and they're machmir. Using a toilet brush is permitted. It's that type of brush that does not absorb the liquids, that would be a rubber or silicone brush that they make today, or even if it was a made of plastic fibers, but the fibers are thick and don't absorb the liquids, and that is no problem of schita. If there are bugs or flies or something like that that's flying around the bathroom, you may still flush the toilet, even though there's a high chance that this bug is going to be washed down and come to a early demise. And we know that killing anything on Shabbos is asur. The issue of shechita is applied to killing animals you're going to eat, but anything, a removal of life, is asur. So if you have an annoying pesky fly in your house, you cannot kill it on Shabbos. Could even be that a mosquito you can't kill on Shabbos. Could be you could trap it, get rid of it, but killing it is problematic. The only case we talk about killing that's mutter on Shabbos is when it's a sakanas nefashos, chased by a dangerous animal. You can then pull out your shotgun and take care of it. That can be done on Shabbos, but anything which is not a sakanas nefashos I'll kill. Therefore, how can you flush your toilet if you have a suspicion that some sort of creepy crawly fly or a living creature might be flushed away? So we're going to say that, first of all, you're not doing it by hand, but kila achayad, that's not for sure it's going to happen, and maybe there's no fly inside, and mamela, when it comes to all these sveikas, we prefer to say that kavod habrias, you can't leave the toilet as is, and therefore rather flush if you have, because of kavod habrias, and mamela, if something happens, we're dealing it with a derabbanan, because you're not doing it direct. To use the facilities in places where they have an electronic eye that realizes where someone has been there and then leaves and then automatically flushes is also on Shabbos. In some places, it's even in Europe, it's even more complex than just flushing. If the whole bathroom goes through a sterilization, when a person leaves, comes into the bathroom and locks the door, a light the outside girl changes from green to red. And when a person leaves, the light stays red for a while and the room goes through a whole sterilization. There's hot water that sprays. It's an interesting system. Saves on having to have it cleaned by human staff, and therefore you just wash it up every time someone's been in there, one of these cheap places. So that obviously would be awesome to use in Shabbos, never mind the light changing from green to red, whatever it is, but also that he's active, seems to leave, you're activating the cleaning system. That would be awesome in Shabbos. Tearing toilet paper on Shabbos is awesome, whether on the perforations or not. If there is no available pre-cut toilet paper, so one should try to find an alternative before you go into the bathroom. Find out if there's tissues or paper or something like that that's available in the house before one goes to the bathroom, and see if there's an alternative. If there's no alternative available, so then we talk about that you can do a derabbanan for the sake of kavod habrias. That would mean that you would tear it kila achayad. Since you didn't kila achayad, it becomes a derabbanan for the sake of kavod habrias. So then one may do it, use elbows or something like that. That would be permitted. Another thing to watch out for is don't buy printed toilet paper, because when you flush it, you're being moichik the printing. Or try to avoid that type of having that toilet paper available on Shabbos. Just an interesting aside, I saw from a Shabbos friend, if you have
printed toilet paper, there's another issue, is that what is printed on it? If you have Hebrew writing and the letters that they use are letters of Torah, what we call Ksav Ashuris, what a sofer writes, then that is something that you shouldn't even use during the week. It's a question of Kriya on Shabbos, it's a question that is a Davos Kedusha. Seems to be something that people are not fully aware of, but we paskin that the letters that they're written in the way that a sofer writes in the Sefer Torah have in Kedusha in and of themselves, not just the content of the language. The writing itself is true, therefore, speech with Kedusha, wipe it out, leave it lying around, and bring it into the bathroom, etc. I've seen, I remember many years ago when I learned this, as usual, when you learn something, halacha becomes halacha l'maaseh very often. I was learning when I learned this the first time, many years ago. I was sitting with my chavrusa, and there on the table was a brochure advertising a Sefer course. And the brochure was distributed very generously in the various shuls, and people, like every other brochure, were ignoring it, fell on the floor, got stepped on. You know, enough soaking, nothing, you know, didn't look like change to people. But in order to advertise his course, so he wanted to do the Sefer course, so he wrote the whole thing in Ksav Ashuri, in the Sefer Torah writing. I remember my chavrusa called the man up and he said, "No, it's very nice of you to have a Sefer course, very nice of you to advertise it, but you're causing a bit of a mishmash. That you're distributing flyers that are ending up on the floor and being stepped on and discarded and thrown away." Interestingly enough, he just ends an art and explained what he's doing. I have my rabbi that I speak to in Fox. An interesting aside, that if you happen to have writing of Ksav Ashuri in the house, not to bring it into the bathroom, sure not, to buy toilet paper that might be printed on it, that type of printed. If you have a toilet roll holder that has a removable bar, you take out to put the roll on it, put it back in again, etc. So that bar, even though it's connected to the whole roof of the house, if you have a problem with bone and so you can take it out. But since this is the way it's used and done on a regular basis, we are so that it's not a problem to take it in or out and on Shabbos. Not that you, I'm just thinking, you know, if you run out of toilet paper, you're not going to put a fresh roll in on Shabbos. You're not supposed to use a fresh roll on Shabbos, but it could be the other way around. Is that in order to remind people not to use the regular toilet paper, but to use the cut paper, so you take the toilet roll off its place and put it away for Shabbos, like that, take the children. I found they don't always remember. So you put the toilet paper away. So if you forgot to do it before Shabbos, remember it on Shabbos, you may take it off on Shabbos, even in cases where you might have to remove that little stick in the middle to take it out. Okay. If you have a puddle of water that is disturbing you that you can't walk across, so there's an interesting halacha as to what you can do in order to make it to walk across that puddle of water, if it's in the yard or even the floor of the house. I mean, today we have tile floor, so if you have a puddle, you take a sponge stick and get rid of it. We spoke about last week, you can't open the drain hole in the bathroom from Travis unless it happens to have a handle or something like that. Find a different way to get rid of it, but you can sponge it away. What would be in your yard? Interestingly, it says in halacha that you can throw something into the puddle in order to make it that you can now step over the puddle because you have something to step on. But it must be something which you won't leave there. If it's that type of thing that you leave there and it becomes part of the floor, so that's pointed, you moist it into the floor. You're adding to the structure of the floor. That'll be a problem. But if you put something there that you never leave there because you still need it, so then it's not bottled to the floor, and then putting something down, as long as it doesn't get affected, it's got wet or something, you know, sheets down or something like that. The example that's given in halacha is if you take tevin, straw. There's different types of straw, but if it's straw that you would use as animal fodder, so you throw it into the yard, now you can walk over the straw and not get your feet wet, giving you a bit of a place to step over the puddles. But it's that type of straw that animals eat, so the owner of that straw is not going to throw it out and leave it there, but rather he's going to give it to his animals, and therefore it is not considered bottled to the ground, and therefore it's mutter to leave it. But to pour out sand or ash or earth or something like that, that would be awesome, because that's something that you normally, even if you're dealing with sand or dirt or something like that, that is not mutter. And that's something that is common, but in the olden days, it was very common that a person kept a box full of earth or sand or something like that at home to cover up a spill. Today you have a spill, you clean it up. Those days you have a spill, your floor was dirt anyway, so you just poured more dirt, poured more sand over it and dried it out. That way it covered. We have it as a Gabriel Hilchos. Yom Tov is discussed when you have when a person does shechita to that type of animal, kiso hadam, after the shechita, whether it's the shechita of a bird or the shechita of a chaya, animals that are regular behemoths, meaning cows and sheep don't need it, but chaya and oifus need kiso hadam. So if a person wants to eat chicken on Yom Tov, and in the days we were fridge, you didn't buy the chicken before Yom Tov, you had your chicken and you shechted it in the morning, and then you did whatever was needed to cook it. So after you did the shechita, you have to do kiso hadam. There's a whole discussion in the Paschim, how do you do kiso hadam if you didn't prepare your sand in advance? Do you do it? Don't you do it? Can you do it? Can't you do it? But that was common, that they had sand in their homes. So if a person has, so obviously we're talking about if a person has a puddle that he wants to cover, he wants to put sand in, we're talking about sand that's not mukta because he has prepared it. Sand that would be in a kid's sandbox, a toy box is another example of it. But basically what we're saying is that it's also to put it out because it's going to become bottled to the ground and we're going to leave it there. And therefore, it's like adding to the structure, adding to the building. But something you wouldn't leave there, modern example, is you have a plank of wood that needs you. You're not going to leave it there. So you can lay the plank of wood over the mud or the puddles that you have in your yard. Now you can walk over the plank. And after Shabbos, you put the plank away, you take care of it, whatever it is. So that would be permitted. Obviously, you have to know whether the plank is mucked or not, depending on what you're setting aside for, and or how you're going to move it. And second of all, you have to know that there's an area that's in a place where you can carry it out. Another halacha, not so applicable on warm climate here in Ramat Beit Shemesh, but if you have ice on the ground and you want to put down salt or something like that, or even sand to stop slipping, that is mutter on Shabbos, because there it's different to putting it directly on the ground, is because you're putting it onto the ice. The ice is going to melt, and when the ice melts, it's going to wash away, and it's going to take everything you put on the ice with it. So since all the salt and all the sand is not going to be left on the ground, but it's going to flow away and be drained away with the melting of the ice, so it's not considered as if you place it on the ground to be battled, and therefore you can put it out on Shabbos in a place others can carry. Okay, now another interesting halacha is how to deal with central heat on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Again, something not so common here in Ramat Beit Shemesh. We do have days where it gets cooler and we have heating. Most of the homes that I know of in this town, either people are using plug-in heaters or they using their air conditioners on heat setting. But as in central heat, it's not so common. Yerushalayim, it's a little bit more common, in particular in the older buildings. In the older buildings, what they did was they put in literally a central heat system. You'd have a boiler down in the basement or something like that, and then when you turned on, it would heat all the apartments at the same time, and it would be taken care of by the Vayat Bayit, and therefore in the winter, the cost of Vayat Bayit would go up significantly, and as a result, people would fret and complain that Vayat Bayit is so expensive, so they put it on a time switch, and it would come on for an hour here and an hour there, and it was interesting that not like people who live in slightly more northern places like in the United States of America or in Europe, where when the winter comes and the radiator is on the whole winter for 4 or 5 feet living, and it goes off at the end of the winter, but here in Eretz Yisrael was much more common, and they'd have it on a time switch or something like that, that turned it on when you get up in the morning or maybe bedtime in the evening, and that was that. Some people have private central heating, which would mean they would have some sort of gas boiler and radiators in the apartment. Even that sort of apartment are not at it. I tried using it, was shocked that nope, you can just heat the spaces you need in the whole apartment. But nevertheless, for those who have it, and there's these halachos for Shabbos, and that is, one should, just to give a basic understanding of how central heating works, is you have a boiler. In a lot of cases, it would mean you'd have like a good, like you have for hot water, where the water gets heated, and that water is then pumped around the house and moves through the radiator. There's two controls to the system. One is how hot is the water going to the boiler, and the second one is how strong will the flow be into the individual radiator. So take, for example, you set the water and then it should travel around the house at 45 degrees, which is about the accelerator's body, and then it goes into the radiator, and the radiator you control by either opening the valve and allowing a strong flow to go through, or closing the valve and a slow flow to go through. Obviously, the stronger the flow, the hotter the radiator, the more effective the two effect on the turn it down. Even the gas boiler systems, when they don't have a container, as in the dud, that holds water, the heated water, and it pumps it around as it gets heated. It's also, you set it at the temperature that it will heat the water to, and then pumps it around the house. And every radiator that gets adjusted accordingly. So there's going to be problems here of adjusting it in Shabbos. Obviously, to adjust it at the boiler to decide what type of temperature the water is going to be moving around, obviously that's clearly it's going to be awesome in Shabbos. You can't change that. But what about opening and closing the individual valves on each radiator? Hooray, the water's going through. You're just allowing more water to go through or less water. The problem is that the moment you open, if you have a radiator that's closed, and you open it, what happens is the fresh hot water is going to go into the radiator, and the cold water that was is going to go back into the system and be heated. So true, you're allowing warm water to come in, but it means also you're getting cold water to go back and to be heated. Therefore, if you have a radiator that's closed, you cannot open it. And if you have a radiator that's open and you want to close it, that could also be problematic because you're causing that the average temperature in the water will change. If you're aware of the fact you have a rather large system, so then by closing a radiator valve is not going to have an immediate effect on the total flow of water, and therefore the furnace that's in the basement that's heating the water is not going to go off immediately. So then we say that you can actually close it. Can't open a radiator on Shabbos, but you can close a radiator because you're not really doing anything. You're lowering the amount of water that's going through the system. Therefore, eventually the boiler will reach its off earlier, but that's not a problem if it's just going to be earlier rather than later. It's only a problem if it's going to be immediate. If you know that the effect is immediate, especially in the smaller systems or the gas systems, there could be very immediate, but if you tell the water to shut it down, then you can't do it. Otherwise, one can close it, but again, one cannot open. Opening is always a problem. If you have air in the system, it doesn't work too well, so a radiator and air release valve at the top. So opening that valve is also problematic on Shabbos because, again, the flow and cooking system and cooking to go on. If you have a thermostat that controls the whole system, one should not, if it's electronic, then for sure it's out. One may not touch it. If manual, like that, mechanical is the word I'm looking for. If it's mechanical, so then one can only adjust if the system is not actively running right now, and you're not going to cause the change, to cause an immediate change. Preferably, if this is totally off and your now set will come back on, that will be not a problem. But sometimes you can tell when a system is on standby. The water is reheated and it's now just pumping it around the house, and the actual boiler is not going. And that will be considered as not active right now. We have but essentially, we try avoid changing this as well. As I said, if it's digital, sure to stay away. Okay, we're running out of time. Come back next week and go on office benefits as well. So I'm going to start it next week. So the short of the day, everybody, a wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.